The Holy Gospel according to John, the first chapter. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overtake it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. Came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, or of the will of the flesh, or of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. John testified to him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks ahead of me, because he was before me.' From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. The law indeed was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. It is the only Son, himself God, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." The Gospel of the Lord. Phew! Isn't that what you are feeling deep down, even if you won't admit it out loud? Phew! Another holiday season over. Now, technically, it's not over. We're only up to day 11 of the 12 days of Christmas when the pipers piping join the partridges, French hens, swans a-swimming, maids a-milking, lords a-leaping, etc. Anyone know what's still to come? Drummers drumming, yes. But how many of you have already put away your Christmas decorations? When we start seeing holiday displays in the stores in September and start hearing holiday tunes in early November, by the time we actually get to December 25th, we're kind of ready to move on. And by the time we get to the second Sunday of Christmas today, many of our trees have been kicked to the curb. Valentine's Day decorations have been in the stores for at least a week already. The kiddos are preparing to head back to school, and people are straightening up their houses, thinking to themselves, how nice it was to have the family here for the holidays. How nice it is that they're gone. It's interesting that on this day, when we are ready to move on into this new year, already looking forward to the longer, warmer days of spring, hurtling toward Ash Wednesday, would you believe Lent starts in 44 days? It's interesting that on this day, our gospel actually takes us backward to Christmas Eve. For we hear once again the nativity story from the Gospel of John, the story I read that evening as candlelight spread across this nave, passed from one person to another. You've noticed, I'm sure, that John's nativity story is not like the others we hear from Luke and Matthew. There are no angel visitations, no babies leaping in their mother's wombs, no long trip back home to be registered by order of the Roman emperor. There are no shepherds and sheep being scared out of their minds in the middle of the night by heavenly hosts telling a wild story about a babe wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger. Now, the Gospel of John's way of telling the Christmas story is a bit different. John goes back to the very beginning, before time and space existed, before big bangs and atoms and expanding universes and gravity, the beginning, when all that was God. In that beginning, John tells us, was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. This Word spoke everything into being. This Word is the wind which swept over the chaos, the power which separated light from darkness and the waters from the dry land, the Spirit which brought forth the great sea monsters and every living creature that moves, every winged bird, the wild animals of the earth, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And then this Word breathed life into us human beings, creating us to be part of all that was good. And we know how that worked out. How long did it take before we were disobedient, before brother started killing brother, before paradise was wrecked by our sin, before we started worshiping anything and everything besides the God who created us? How long did it take? Minutes? Seconds? Nanoseconds? Time after time, since the beginning, as God's people have turned away from the divine source of all life and goodness and mercy, God has reached out to call us back, yearning for us to live in the light and not the darkness. God sent prophets through the ages who spoke harsh words of condemnation and judgment and gentle words of hope and promise. God tried to wash the earth clean, gave clear commandments about right and wrong, delivered God's people from slavery into freedom. And yet, time after time, since the beginning, it was never quite enough. Just never quite enough for us to see, to understand how much God loves us and wants for us. God was not willing to give up. When the countless prophets God sent didn't work, when a flood, the parting of a sea, burning bushes, a long journey through the wilderness, manna from heaven, and all those other ways God tried to get our attention didn't work, God found another way. It was an unusual approach, you could say. An unusual approach for the creator of the universe, the King of glory, the one through whom all things were made. The Reverend Dr. Bryant Kirkland does a wonderful job of explaining how and why this way of God's worked. He was the pastor of Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City, as well as a seminary lecturer, denominational leader, and popular preacher. Pastor Kirkland was traveling to do a series of sermons out on the West Coast. He was under a tremendous amount of pressure and recalls how he very much needed the time he would have on the plane ride from here to there to study and prepare. After he found his seat and got what he needed out of his briefcase, Pastor Kirkland says, "I buckled down and let everyone near me feel the tension. Here was the message of my body language. Don't bother me. I am a busy man with places to go and things to do." A young woman and a baby slipped into the seat next to him. "I knew this was going to be very difficult," he goes on. "I didn't make eye contact with either of them. I kept a straight face and looked very Presbyterian. It lasted about 6 minutes. Pretty soon, this little boy began fussing around. "Man, man," he cooed up at me. I couldn't resist. I put my sermon back in my briefcase, picked him up, and just loved him all the way across the country. After they landed in LA, the little boy's mom thanked Pastor Kirkland for being so kind to her and her child. But as he made his way into the hustle and bustle of the airport, smiling and feeling more at peace than he had in a while, Pastor Kirkland realized how that little baby had broken in. "When all else fails, send the baby" isn't a rule you'll find in too many books on leadership or military strategy or anywhere, actually, and that's probably a good thing. But it is what our God chose to do, to break into hardened hearts. God sent a baby, the Word made flesh, the Word who was at the beginning, made vulnerable, helpless, love lying in a manger. I hope we are never over that. I hope that the radical good news of great joy we hear at Christmas doesn't get boxed up with the rest of our holiday stuff and put away. Because we need that baby. The world needs that baby. Now and always, today and every day. So Merry Christmas.